Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. We will go a different direction today, not just doing coaching stuff around the Cardinals. We've been heavy on that. Manny Machado and the Arizona Diamondbacks. I'm going to get into that here in a minute. Should we or should we not be talking about LeVar Ball? Not just on this show, but any show in general. The business side of LeVar Ball and how media companies are putting LeVar Ball in your face every single day. Should we be doing it or not? Journalistically speaking, is there a story there to tell every day or not? Because really, it's come into the battle of page views by putting LeVar Ball on shows, and I've just ignored him. If he's here in Phoenix, and every day I could be doing LeVar Ball, and every day I'd be getting page views and ratings off of it, is that journalistically responsible? Bottom line, Brad, you got to make money. You should be talking LeVar Ball every hour. You should be talking about the replacement for Bruce Arians on every show and nothing else. No, that's not how this works. Paula Bovin is going to be with us, the professor from Cronkite. So I want to talk to her about this, the shift in coverage of a crazy parent or an entrepreneur or, hey, his son's the most popular player on the Lakers. Of course, you should be talking about LeVar Ball if you're in Los Angeles or nationwide. If LeVar Ball says the team has quit and his son's on the team, then of course you should be talking more LeVar Ball. Are you kidding me, Brad? This shouldn't even be a discussion. Well, I could see that point, but I want to get further into that with Paula. Zach Clark is going to join us. Zach did well his first time on the show with ESPN Tucson. And I want to have Zach back on because the U of A head football coaching job really should be decided today or tomorrow. And I'll fill you in as to why the dates and the timelines, the importance of that. And the name that I think makes the most sense, the people that they have talked to, I did work on this last night. The coaches convention is going on, spoke to people back there, and I'll give you my thoughts on that. And then we'll have talk to the Lopes today. Always love talk to the Lopes and what we do there each week. Jared Martin will be with us from the basketball team, the Aussie, because tomorrow night, the biggest game in the Valley, the biggest game in the state on the college basketball front is going to be at Grand Canyon University. Not in Tempe, not in Tucson. New Mexico State against GCU, WAC supremacy, early season, the only appearance by New Mexico State here. The Aggies are usually the top team that always makes the postseason, that always makes March Madness. So we have to talk about that. We'll do it with Jared Martin. And a little bit about his backstory. I think it's pretty cool. Let's get you caught up. Some of the things on my mind brought to you by Sagicor. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Sagicor Now. Log on to SagicorNow.com. Get your life insurance taken care of, guys. When was the last time that you checked into life insurance? Why go on and not address it? You need to do so by just logging on to Sagicor Now. SagicorNow.com. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Protect what matters most. All right, so Ken Rosenthal wrote about the Diamondbacks last night. And whenever Ken Rosenthal writes about something, it's usually coming from a certain source in the front office from the Diamondbacks. Usually it's proven to be correct. So this is just not an insider that goes about his business, throws some stuff up against the wall, gets a few page views. Ken wrote on The Athletic last night and then updated it this morning that the Arizona Diamondbacks continue to discuss a potential trade for Baltimore Orioles infielder Manny Machado. Finalized deal is not imminent as of yet. Rosenthal reports the Diamondbacks remain the most persistent potential suitor for the O's slugger. The Yankees and Red Sox are among the other possible landing spots, but general manager Dan Duquette convincing team owner Peter Angelos to trade a major asset to an AL East division rival likely would be difficult, this according to Ken Rosenthal. Last season, Machado had numbers that were not as impressive as they were the year before. He still hit 33 home runs, however, making the third straight year that he hit 30 home runs. He is 25 years of age. He can become a free agent after the 2018 season. Sources have told Ken Rosenthal that he's interested in making a full-time move to shortstop, which would bolster his value on the open market after spending most of the major league career at third base. Machado hasn't talked about his impending free agency much in public since telling reporters last April that he lives in the moment. His trade value isn't nearly as high if he won't consider a contract extension with the acquiring club. In Arizona, Machado would likely be granted his wish of playing shortstop with Jake Lamb at third and Ketel Marte shifting to second, allowing the versatile Chris Owens to play a utility role. All right, so let's get through this. Here in the Valley, Nick Pecora over at AZ Central wrote something along the lines of life without Paul Goldschmidt for the Diamondbacks. Now, far be it from me to think that the Diamondbacks would float that story over to the Republic to put to Nick, that Nick puts to paper, and that the Diamondbacks would gauge what the view around the Valley, around the state would be like with life after Paul Goldschmidt. Far be it from me to think that happened. I think it did. So when I look at this, if Goldschmidt's not here, and we've talked about the Goldschmidt contract for the last couple of years, and it's usually the, well, we'll get around to it, and so on and so forth. If you're going to bring in Manny Machado, and Rosenthal doesn't report who'd be going back to Baltimore, doesn't report that. Is this the spot where the Diamondbacks say, we've already been told, remember, Paul Goldschmidt's changed agents. We've been told by the Goldschmidt camp, get him out of here. He's done what he can do in Arizona. And is Goldschmidt somebody that would be on the move on this sort of deal? Manny Machado would come here. He's younger. But again, you go under the premise of you'd only have him for a year unless you can get him to agree to an extension. I like the fact that Mike Hazen and his group aim high. I think for far too long, the idea of let's not go get the biggest name that's out there. And in terms of position players, now you may disagree with me and say, well, what was JD Martinez? JD Martinez was a salary dump. That was the Tigers trying to get something out of Detroit, purging their roster, get something, anything, because they weren't going anywhere. Well, what was Zach Greinke? Zach Greinke, yeah, that was putting all the chips on the table. But in Zach Greinke, now the Diamondbacks are looking at that contract saying, how can we get out from under it? There's only two ways that this happens from my point of view. One is you trade one of your most valued assets, whether that's Greinke or whether that's Goldschmidt, to make this deal for Machado happen. If Ken Rosenthal's not writing this, I'm not even discussing this. And there's probably, I shouldn't say that, there's probably a couple of other writers, but the fact that Ken is putting this out there, the Diamondbacks are the most aggressive and most persistent suitors of Machado, we got to talk about this. The other way that they would go is they would have to empty out their farm system. Now, on the surface, before you laugh me off the stage here, I know the farm system isn't what it once was. I know that. But there still are some players of value down there. Are there the high-end, high-ceiling guys? If I'm to believe the people who are much smarter than I'll ever be, the Diamondbacks farm system does not have much, but they have some. You put Jake Lamb at third. Jake Lamb has been someone that I've looked at and has said, why is it the second half of the season each year he scuffles? Why is that? And I think it's a very fair question to ask. You put Manny Machado at shortstop, the middle part of your infield, Ketel Marte goes over to second. Chris Owings can play wherever he is needed to play. You're pretty darn good up the middle. If you had to put a Goldschmidt deal out there, suddenly at first base, what happens? If you put a Greinke deal out there, what happens if you have a Greinke depart from here? Greinke departs, immediately you get salary relief. Immediately you look at your rotation and say, yeah, you know what? We are not as good. I got it. We're not as deep as we once were. But I do think Robbie Ray has moved himself into the conversation of being a high number two, even a number one starter. So with spring training just over a month away, and last time I checked, JD Martinez has yet to sign. This Machado story comes up last night, and this morning Ken Rosenthal reinserts it, works on a little bit further. I myself would do this deal, and I'd do it even if it did involve Goldschmidt or Greinke. Obviously, I'd want to have some sort of assurance or some sort of, let's agree to the extension now and make this happen with Manny Machado to bring him here. We should probably call Pedro on this one, Eric, at some point. I don't know if it's maybe tomorrow or, but you know, this is big stuff. Big bombshell there from Ken Rosenthal. Manny Machado and the Diamondbacks. All right, on the other side, Paula Bovin's going to join us, the professor. She's doing something really cool on stage with, well, I'll let her tell you about it. She's doing something cool with two names that you know, well, at least one name you know for sure with Michael Phelps that she's doing. And we're going to talk about LeVar Ball and journalistically, should we be talking about him and having discussions every day and including him in shows as is happening for merely page views, or is there a story there? That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Joined now by the professor, let's head over to Arizona State University, where Paula Bovin was doing something big today. Have you already sat with Phelps and Bob Bowman and moderated this deal?
No, so actually it was only Bowman, and it was yesterday, and it was emceeing kind of a ASU alumni event.
Yeah.
But I had never met him, and he was fascinating, and some of the insight about Michael Phelps was mind-boggling. People talk about stuff like visualization, and I tend to tune that out because it sounds cheesy. But the reality is, he was telling me how Phelps visualizes every second of a race before he competes, and even visualizes the bad things that can kind of happen, and does this all the time. And he talked about, you know, he's been coaching him, I think, since Phelps was 11 or whatever. And the absolute certainty Phelps had that he was going to be an Olympian at that age, and things he wrote down and gave to Bowman. I mean, Phelps is wired differently than a lot of us and even a lot of athletes, and it certainly leads to why this guy has been so successful in his career.
It's interesting because before the U of A basketball game, Bobby Hurley asked Phelps to come in and talk to the team. Mm-hmm. And Trey Holder said that he spoke about how losing is more important in the growth and development of a person athletically. And I would agree with this just in professional work too, that losing is more important and you'll get more from losing than you will from winning. Did Bowman talk about that at all?
No, in some ways, not specifically those words, but just the lessons in failure and certainly falling and tripping and making mistakes lead to a more accomplished and successful person, because someone who only wins or who has only had things handed to them, you know, it's going to come back to bite you. And certainly the struggles pay off. It's just a hard thing, I think, to convince someone who's 11 or even a teenager or somebody in college that sports is always about winning and achieving that ultimate goal. So I think that's a hard message to get through sometimes.
She is the Hall of Famer, Arizona Athletic Hall of Famer, and Arizona State Professor Paula Bovin with us for a few minutes. All right, so I want to have this deep dive with you about LeVar Ball. Journalistically speaking, should we be reporting on LeVar Ball going to Lithuania? Should reporters be sent with him? Should we be reacting and responding to everything that he says? The latest on this is when he says that the Lakers have tuned out Luke Walton. Rick Carlisle of the Mavericks showed up and said, I think credentials should be revoked for those reporters that ask those types of questions. To me, that's way over the top on this. But are we doing too much LeVar Ball simply for page views?
There's a lot of content in what you just said. First of all, I think Rick Carlisle is being ridiculous. I understand his frustrations about it. But one, he's not the one to dictate. You know, I heard them talking about maybe the NBA stripping credentials for people who talk to Ball. That's ridiculous. One, that's not their job. Two, and maybe I'm in the minority here, but I don't think we completely ignore LeVar Ball. And I don't know if you saw The Athletic just had a promo, and they basically said, no LeVar College coverage. We're not going to cover LeVar Ball as a then you get a discount to subscribe to The Athletic. I don't think you can take that kind of approach. I think you use discretion in what you write. You don't have to quote him every time because, frankly, I think the public is getting sick of it. But, you know, if the starting point guard's father is ripping how a coach is performing, I don't have a problem with a reporter writing that.
That's a story.
It's a story.
It's interesting because it's a team sport. Okay, so right. So let's go over on if it's golf or if it's tennis. You're in an individual sport. If it's Michael Phelps' dad saying he doesn't like racing against somebody else, that's an individual. If it's a dad, though, Paula, that is saying my son's team, they've tuned the coach out. If it's the 10th man on the team's dad saying it, does it make it into print? No. If it's a first-round pick's dad who's saying it, does it make it into print? I would say yes, as much as distaste as it is. It's as though the dad has figured out how to get our business to pay attention to him. And simply saying, we are not going to write about you at all, I think is wrong. But mm-hmm. I do think 90% of what we put out there is helping him grow his brand and doing things that are not of value.
Yeah, I mean, I think the media needs to exercise a certain amount of discretion. I don't think you, every time he says something, you write it, because frankly, I don't think that's good business either, because people are going to be sick of hearing it. But I think you can't be a true member of the media and practice good journalism if you say, I'm not writing anything that this guy says. And you bring up a really interesting point, I think, about team sports, too. There's value in learning and understanding what he's saying. You know, I mean, listen, there's been a long line of sort of these stage fathers, right? Richard Williams with Venus and Serena, Earl Woods to a certain extent with Tiger, building these perfect kids. Right. And I think you have to give LeVar Ball some credit in, for the most part, and I know he's got a son that just got in trouble, but for the most part, he's raised good kids. I know that Lonzo Ball is well liked on that team, from his teammates to his coaches. I think he did a lot of things right. And frankly, and I know people hate bringing race into it, but the common thread about those fathers that I mentioned, they're African American fathers of African American children, and they have had to deal with things over the course of their youth, and I'm sure they're in some ways trying to protect their sons. You know, maybe seeing that African American athletes for many years weren't getting the endorsements that white athletes did. And that's not the case, obviously, anymore. We saw Michael Jordan change and others change that. But, you know, there's that factor in it, too. So while I tune him out a lot, and 80% of what he says I don't want to hear, I think it's really wrong for, one, the media to say I'm not ever going to cover him, and then, two, for the NBA or these coaches to threaten credentials or whatever.
Is it fair then to put out there, look right into the camera or write it out, we're going to talk about LeVar Ball, even though a certain segment of you are really sick of it. There is enough of you that say you're going to give us a ratings point and you're going to make our business grow if we pay attention to him every day. Like ESPN sending Jeff Goodman over to Lithuania to say he's covering the two boys and all he's doing is having LeVar take shots from halfway around the world at Luke Walton, to me seems disingenuous and to me seems beneath what journalism should be, in my view.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, he got his shot in. I mean, if that's what you're going to write every day, I don't want to read it. I think that's just bad business more than anything. But I think there's newsworthiness in what LeVar Ball is doing in the Lithuania story and what's happening there and how, you know, whether that country is embracing him. I think there's stories there. But I don't think it's going to be a big ratings thing from here on out every time LeVar Ball rips somebody, because I think the public's getting sick of it. So I think, again, it's about journalists using discretion.
But they get sick of it, and it still goes on and on and on, meaning there are decision makers that are sitting there saying, we need another Ball story on this show within the first 5 minutes to hook people. It's like putting Don King on back in the day. I knew if I put Don King on my show back in the day, mm-hmm. I'd have an audience. I would, and Don King was a huckster and Don King was a salesman. And LeVar is really no different. It's just he's got kids that are involved in this now. And he's got the president involved. And he's got his kid for shoplifting. And he's got this shoe brand. And it just doesn't end. But to,
well, and then I mean, and now it's the time to rein it in. You don't ignore them completely, but you do have to rein it in. I mean, look, if the Arizona Republic decided to run the, you know, Cardinals cheerleader of the day in her bikini on the front page of their website every day, they'd probably get a lot of hits.
Yep.
But they're making the decision not to do that because at some point you have to be the person making the decision of what is of value to the public. You may think they want it, but sometimes you have to make the decision that you think is best for journalism and for the paper and the message that it sends. So it's kind of a lazy example, but I think there has to be some, to your point, some credibility and some responsibility with these decision makers that you mentioned, that there's not newsworthiness anymore, that it's just for clicks. And you have to decide what's newsworthy. I think a lot of what LeVar Ball has done in the past has been newsworthy, but I think they need to start drawing that line now.
How much are you going to teach this or talk about it?
Yeah, this kind of discussion has come up a lot, the what is newsworthy and what gets clicks, because they're not always the same thing, and
sure,
it's a constant struggle.
Yeah,
I teach. And that's why, you know, if you see strip ads in newspapers and sports sections for strip clubs that you used to not see, there's no newsworthiness, but people are going to turn to the page.
No, that's right. That's right. Stay well. Thank you.
Okay, Brad.
Always good to catch up with Paula Vogel, the professor and the Hall of Famer, Arizona Sports Hall of Fame. Zach Clark is next. We're going to go to Tucson because this coaching search for the replacement to Rich Rodriguez has got to wrap up either today or tomorrow from my point of view, and I'll tell you why and some of the names. The name, I believe, makes the most sense. That's next. So let's turn our attention now to the U of A head football coaching job. Last night I spoke to some coaches at the convention back east. That is wrapping up. It is my view that Kevin Sumlin is the guy. Doesn't mean he's going to get the job, that there has been some dialogue back and forth on the number. That Bo Baldwin has been interviewed. A couple of other people have been interviewed as well. I wrote about it. You can check out the names and all that over on the website at sports360az.com. Here's the thing on this. The open period for recruiting starts day after tomorrow. If Dave Hickey wants to have some credibility going into this, I'm fine if you want to fire Rich Rodriguez. It's completely unacceptable if they don't have their coach in line by tomorrow night. Completely. Because you're now blowing recruiting days out the door because you can't get this done. They went and hired a search firm. I'm not big on search firms. A search firm is right here in Scottsdale. You should always, a very wise man told me this once. He was really good at what he did. He owned a baseball team and a basketball team here in Phoenix. You can figure it out. And this wise man said to me years and years ago, the best administrators always have five names in the top of their desk drawer for all positions in case something happens. So this idea of going out and having to hire a search firm, to me, is just ludicrous. You can pick up the phone, you can find agents, you can have people on your staff. Nonetheless, they've gone that route. Do I think Rick Neuheisel has kicked the tires? Sure, I do. We had Rick on the show a few weeks ago. He intimated at the time he was interested in getting in on the ASU job. Rick is moving back here to Scottsdale. Do I think that Ray Anderson pursued Kevin Sumlin and actually met and made an offer to Kevin Sumlin? To this day, I will believe that that did happen. And to this day, I will believe Kevin Sumlin said, I can't come here for what you're offering me. And the two parted amicably. And that is why Herm Edwards came here and people were like, wow, they're really not paying him much. Yeah, because Ray doesn't have much to pay. So if you're Dave Hickey and you're the people at U of A, you can go hire Kevin Sumlin and you can have Khalil Tate and you win. That's my view on this. To get a closer view, because he's right there in the backyard of U of A in Tucson, is Zach Clark. Zach Clark was on last week, the Zach Clark Show, the host on ESPN Tucson, and he did a great job last week in spite of what people said. Let's bring him back on. How are you?
I'm doing well, Brad, just watching the rain fall in Tucson. I don't get to see that very often, so I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad. All right, I gave my long opening. What do you see, what do you believe is fact versus fiction around this football job in Tucson?
Well, first, I want to echo your why on earth would you use a search firm comment. That, to me, especially when you're Arizona operating at a not as great a budget as you would want, why not pick up the phone and call Dick Tomey? Not to offer him a job,
sure,
but to see what he thinks about it, as opposed to blowing $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 on a search firm, I agree with everything that you said there, Brad. You talk about guys like Bo Baldwin, who is the offensive coordinator at Cal, or Neil Brown, right, the head coach at Troy. Rick Neuheisel, to me, is a non-starter. I mean, it's really easy to like Rick Neuheisel. I like Rick Neuheisel, but, you know, it's been a long time since he succeeded at Colorado, at Washington. His last run through at UCLA was less than exciting. And you said kick the tires. I don't mind that phrase, but I don't want to buy a car where you've got to kick the tires, man. I want to buy a car where I look at it and I say, yes, that's the one. And I think that you're right that Kevin Sumlin, he is the guy. And then to your point, doesn't mean he's going to come here, but I think that's what Arizona has to strive for. I think that's what they have to want to do for a variety of reasons, and we talked about that last time I was on with you. You know, but if it comes down to a money thing, if Arizona State can't do it, Arizona certainly can't do it. I know that'll make some Arizona alums and fans mad, but it's true that the operating budget for which Arizona operates is less than what Arizona State does. And, you know, part of what does help Arizona, though, is those vested stock options that made, I think Rich Rodriguez was the fifth highest paid coach in college football when he got the boot. So here's my thing. When Greg Byrne was here, and we can have a different conversation about what he did also while he was here, but when he hired Rich Rodriguez, he said, we're going to fire Mike Stoops, and the next time you're going to hear from me, it's going to be with the new head coach. And that is exactly what happened, and I really appreciated that, because now I don't mind having these conversations. It's part of what we do, but who knows down which rabbit hole we need to jump to find where the answer is going to be, because – I mean, it's like the Cardinals' job. They've interviewed like 9 people, and Arizona's getting up there too. And I'm okay with that. They should look the way that the Phoenix Suns hired their last head coach, Earl Watson, was horrible. They picked the first guy that the players wanted. They said, "You, we're taking you." So I'd rather have it this way. I just don't know where it leads. And you're right, Brad, that if they don't have this done by tomorrow night, Arizona's going to forfeit some very serious recruiting time that they certainly can't afford.
Okay, so let's go through some of what you said there. The booster side of this, whenever I hear they can't afford it, I believe, Zach, that there's always a way, and that it's a Jim Click, Bob Baffert, the head of this regional petroleum company, phone call away. You know what I mean by that? It's you got to go hit on those guys that can suddenly, wow, what a surprise, or you have to get creative in your structuring of the deal. In Kevin Sumlin's case, if you put Kevin Sumlin with Khalil Tate and you're Dave Heeke, you come out of this smelling like a rose. If you're Dave Heeke and you go through this and you bring Jed Fish in from UCLA, or you bring Neil Brown in, who has only East Coast ties from what I see. You should interview Marcel Yates to put him in that position because he is popular and he does recruit well. I don't know if they've done that or not, but I know they've interviewed Baldwin. I know for a fact they've interviewed Brown and they've interviewed Fish. They did an hour and a half to an hour and 45 minutes each with those three for sure. And I know for a fact they've reached out to Sumlin. My point is, for Heeke, he can finally hit a home run on football in Tucson. The last time that Greg did, it was a home run for, what would you say, year and a half, 2 years? Then there came this Rich was one toe in and nine toes out of Tucson.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, that's the other thing that I'm picking up on apprehension-wise, Brad, is that people down here, or just Arizona Wildcats fans in general, they're concerned that no matter who you hire, whether it's Rick Neuheisel, but if it's Kevin Sumlin or Neil Brown, that both of them are just going to look to jump somewhere else. That there's this feeling of insecurity that no matter who Arizona hires, whether it's an up-and-coming guy or, you know, a popular former coach like Sumlin, that person will be gone faster than they would like. But I remind people that we thought that about Rich, too, and after 6 years, they fired him. And here's one more thing when you talk about getting creative or shaking those donors. You know, I don't know what happened or why it is this way, but when Greg Byrne was on campus, there's this guy named Artie Moreno, and he shed a few bucks, and he's got some Tucson ties.
Yeah.
He's disappeared. And now things have changed over the last year or so. I wonder if the greatest coup of all, Brad, would be bringing Artie Moreno back into the fold more than the other head coach.
I see what you're saying. And there's that's fair. I think that's very fair to bring out. I would point out, though, that look, Larry Smith went to the U of A, and Larry Smith won, and USC came and said, we're getting you out of Tucson. There's no harm in that, is there? No harm in that, because if you're going to win, you need to win immediately with Kevin Sumlin and Khalil Tate while you have Khalil Tate. This offseason is going to be Khalil Tate Heisman Trophy candidate. This offseason would be Kevin Sumlin, really interesting hire in Tucson.
Yes, there's no question about that. And I think my broader point is that you're right. I don't have a problem with that in the seat that I sit. But I think, and again, I'm not gonna be patted on the back for this. I think it just shows a certain insecurity around Arizona football where almost no matter what you do, people are probably not going to be happy at first, and maybe not at all.
Yeah, I just feel as though. So what you're telling me today is, what I'm hearing in your voice is, it doesn't sound as though from the people that you're speaking to that this thing is close to being done. I'm hearing just the opposite. Is there somewhere in between on this with you and I?
Yes, and I would agree with that. Here's the thing. What needs to happen and what will happen could change or could accelerate very quickly. I mean, I'll be honest with you, Brad. When that story broke last Tuesday, it took 90 minutes for Rich to be canned.
Right.
It didn't take very long. So
Right. Who
knows what's going to change between now and then. But let me say this. You said something earlier that was very smart, that every person that's in charge of any sports team, whether it's an athletic director or a general manager or an owner, whatever, has a list. You always have that list. The list changes as you observe certain things, as certain people move about the country. And look, Arizona's going to try to convince you that they decided before last Tuesday to fire Rich Rodriguez, which means that they would have even more time to think about this
Right. And
put it together. And so when I think about all of those things, plus the search firm, I think, why are we still having this conversation? Why isn't it over already? And if it's not over already, then why would I assume it's going to happen more quickly? I'm not arguing with your sources. I'm just saying, what the hell is happening?
Okay, so and I'll go back even a step further. Rich Rod hired an assistant coach 2 weeks ago, right?
Yes.
It was from Florida.
And signed a recruiting class.
So everything was in place, even though the feel I got, even at the U of A ASU football game, was Hickey didn't like him. So there was this, he convinced a coach to come out here and walk away from that coach's job. I want to say it was Florida International, right? Or Florida Atlantic. It was one of the Florida schools.
Florida Atlantic. They'd come
yeah.
off that huge bowl win.
Yeah.
He's the offensive coordinator.
So he convinces, he's given the power and the authority, Rich is, to hire this coach. And that happened about 2 weeks ago, 2 to 3 weeks
yep.
ago, right? So in that span, things change. So a coach walks out on his job to come here for a coach that's going to get blown out. That ethically is kind of hard for me to deal with, I must tell you. From a U of A standpoint, it's, yeah, go ahead and hire somebody. And, oh, wait. And they were investigating Rich 2 months ago, 3 months ago on this. That just seems odd. So.
Well, the whole thing is odd. And that's kind of my point, is that the University of Arizona, both from a presidential leadership standpoint and from an athletic leadership standpoint, is going to tell you that they've made this decision at some time before last week. But if that's true, why did all these other things happen? I completely agree with you. And now, for the offensive line coach that was going to be, you know, I feel sorry for him in a way, but really, who's the victim? It may be him, but he's going to get paid.
Sure.
He signed a contract.
Yeah, signed his deal.
If he's not retained, he'll walk away with $250,000, and Arizona's going to look at themselves and go, whoops.
Yeah.
Again, ethically, you're right, but it's even worse, or not even worse, but it's more than just ethically wrong. It's accounting poor.
Okay, give me 10 seconds then. Who's the coach going to be as you sit here today from your point of view?
I think it's going to be somebody like a Bo Baldwin or a Brown at Troy, Neil Brown. It should be Kevin Sumlin, but maybe it's because I went to school here. I just don't see it.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Zach. Good stuff. There's Zach Clark in Tucson. Host of the Zach Clark Show on ESPN Tucson. Good stuff there. On the other side, we're going to circle back on the Manny Machado to the Diamondbacks trade talk and some other things on my mind. That's next. So a couple other things before we get out of here. The story of the day, I believe, is Ken Rosenthal and what he wrote in The Athletic about the Diamondbacks pursuing Manny Machado, and the Diamondbacks are being the most persistent and the most aggressive. If, in fact, the Diamondbacks are able to do this, and the Orioles need pitching. I know I brought up Goldschmidt earlier, and I think you've just got to look at the roster top to bottom. There's a real split, I believe, around town of fans, and actually statewide. I shouldn't even say around town. And that is, what do you do with Paul Goldschmidt in the future? Paul Goldschmidt has been here for 6+ years. And in those 6+ years, the Diamondbacks have made it to the postseason. They haven't had long postseason success. Paul Goldschmidt has played at a below-market contract. I don't believe the Diamondbacks have handled that one in the best way possible. Part of it is they've had different front office people that have come and gone. And it's just the business side of sports. It's the business side of baseball. So are they at a point where it's better to trade Goldschmidt now? And half of the audience, or a little bit more than that audience around the valley, around the state, would say, what are you guys doing? Or is it that you really totally trust implicitly in Mike Hazen's ability to build a team? If you look at the way that the team has been built, the way that the team was constructed last year, in very short order, most of the moves they made, most of the moves, you have to look at it and say, wow, that really worked out well for them. They were able to go do this and do that and make it all the way into the postseason. And it didn't matter to me if you didn't like Fernando Rodney. I was not a big fan of seeing Fernando Rodney out on the hill. I thought it was too much of an adventure. But the bottom line is, if you look at the number of saves he had last year, he did the job. Now he's not here. He moves on. So Boxberger comes in. Archie's still on the back end of the pen. And maybe Archie eventually goes into the starting rotation. But that move worked out. You'd have to say that the manager that was brought in, that move worked out. So if Mike Hazen, I don't believe he's a nincompoop, okay? I don't. And I really believe that the organization is going through Hazen. I have not felt that in the past. I felt as though there was a power struggle at the top of the food chain in this organization between Derek Hall and whoever it was that was general manager. Didn't matter if it was Kevin Towers or Dave Stewart, or even before that. And so when you look at Josh Burns, and so when you go through where the organization is now, if Mike Hazen is looking at this and saying, all right, this is as good as it's going to get with Goldschmidt, and I've got to trade him, and I know the court of public opinion, we're going to have people upset, and we're going to have people that are going to let go of their jerseys, and we're going to have some people that will cancel out on season tickets, and we may in fact take a step back, but we want to set ourselves up for not just a one-year run, but for a several-year run. And so we may trade our most valuable commodity. Or you go get Manny Machado, you get rid of Greinke's contract because, again, the Orioles need pitching. I would not be happy if Manny Machado came here and somebody like Robbie Ray were included in the deal. I would not be happy. Doesn't matter how you try and say that, sell it. I would not part with Robbie Ray. Robbie Ray is my future. I got to get out from under Greinke's contract. And when people tell me, you know, they've got to stick with Greinke, why? I don't get that. I mean, I really don't. I don't hate on him. It's just he needs to move on. Business-wise, he needs to move on. He is not worth the dollars at the top of the rotation. He didn't get people out. He couldn't figure out how to get people out in the postseason even late into the year. And it's all well and good in April, May, June, and July, but I got to have it when it's nut-cutting time, the final 3-4 weeks of the season, big starts, big games, and postseason. I can't have somebody barely getting along into the fourth inning. That just doesn't work. So, is there anything on tonight, Eric, sports-wise, or anything that's – I haven't seen – our show's on. Our show looked good. You're going to be on that show. You'll be on that show. You didn't like your look, huh? You need a better sweater or?
I just didn't like my look.
Is that it?
I had, truth be told.
Yeah, please.
Before we taped the show.
Yeah.
I had lunch, and I had two tiny, itty little stains on.
Oh, no. What are you doing?
And yeah, and I saw it.
So watch tonight, then send him a note and say, what is your problem, schmo? No, this is why you have to always have, I've learned this the hard way a few times because of that. You also have to have like backup gear. You just have to have backup gear around. And that's it. There's nothing wrong with that. It's like the time I didn't have makeup and, I put on the makeup of, one of our female reporters. She left her makeup in and she's like, oh yeah, you can use it. And she looked at me kind of cross-eyed, and makeup is all about shade that you put on the air. This person was African-American. So I put on her shade of makeup and I went on the air and I came back out and everybody was kind of like, wow, you looked really different on the air today. Who knew, right? You wipe it off and it's a one-time mistake. It happened. It's fine. No, there's nothing on tonight. The Olympics are going to be... Are you in the Winter Olympics? Outside of the fact that North Korea is going to send a couple of skaters to South Korea, I don't know anybody else. Lindsey Vonn, maybe. The Flying Tomato, maybe. But I have no idea about the Winter Olympics next month. And NBC is starting to run it down my throat when I'm watching stuff. And I don't know if I'm going to get into it or not. I mean, the geopolitical side with North Korea sending athletes to South Korea is really interesting to me, especially in the climate we're in. But that's about it. Edwin Rodriguez, chairman of the board. Good job. Didn't screw up that I'm aware of. Eric Sorensen, as always, senior executive vice president of everything, getting the job done. Thanks to Jordan Hamm, Haley Stasiak, cast of thousands, interns, whatever, whoever. And we will see you tomorrow. This show repeats throughout the day if you missed any part of it. And it repeats over and over and over on AZ Central and here on Sports360AZ.com. Our TV show tonight on Fox Sports Arizona. We're self-funded thanks to those of you that spend your sponsorship dollars with us. Without you, we don't do this. Have a great day. Let's talk GCU athletics now. It is time for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk GCU, talk athletes on campus, big events coming up, and much, much more. Jared Martin is with us this week. I know you have practice here in a couple of minutes to get out on the floor. Let's just talk about your season and how it's been to this point, Jared.
It's been good. We've had our ups and downs. We're a new team this year with a lot of new freshmen that are playing significant minutes, and then with Casey transferring in. We've been sort of finding our groove, and I think recently we've really started to gel, especially on the defensive end, and then offensively we're starting to click right now. So it's been good. We've had some tough losses, especially on the road to Illinois and Boise State, close ones. But other than that, we've been doing good. I think we're 11-5 right now. So the record's pretty good right now, but we wish we could have a couple of those games back, that's for sure.
Well, and you have New Mexico State. That's the biggest game in the conference every year. I mean, every game's important, but obviously having the Aggies coming in, you know, the Havocs are going to be geared up. You know, you guys have got to have your A game. So tell me about the matchup with New Mexico State and what to expect.
Yeah, it's going to be a huge game. We always look forward to this one, especially at home, because we pack it out almost every game, but this one's always amplified to a whole new level. So we're excited, but New Mexico State are a really good team this year. They've had some real high-quality wins. They play really high-pressure defense, and then they've got a couple of really good guards on the offensive end that can really score the ball. So it's going to be a tough matchup, that's for sure.
Jared, let's go over your story. For those that watch Talk to the Lopes every week, we like hearing how did you get from point A to point B. What was your journey like to get you to Grand Canyon University and play for Dan Marley?
It's an interesting one, for sure, because it's across the world. But just through playing international, like world championships and stuff, Chris Kervoline, our assistant coach, reached out to me and said, hey, like, we'd really like to recruit you. And it's sort of within a month, it sped up super quick. I came on a visit within 3 weeks of talking to him. It was their very first exhibition game as a Div 1 school. I came out, absolutely loved it. Met Mr. Colangelo, Brian Mueller, obviously sat down with Coach Marley, and just loved where the vision of the school and where the program was going, and I couldn't say no to it, that was for sure.
Did you know much about Dan Marley, or did you have to research him on YouTube? How did you know about his playing career?
I didn't have to research him as much as just more people that I knew about him. So, like, I'd tell people, this is our – like, he's our head coach, and they would all – all the older guys I had played basketball with all absolutely loved him, especially in Australia where it's mainly shooters and white guys. So everyone loved Dan Marley, that's for sure.
The caliber of basketball, Jared, tell me as a youth there what the trajectory is like in terms of your 8, your 9, your 10, and then you're playing club, and then you go on and play, versus here in the States we're seeing more and more younger 8, 9, 10-year-olds being pushed to play nothing but club and not even school ball. What's that like in Australia?
It's completely different. Like, high school basketball is not really a big thing back home. It's all about club, and you play with your club for most of the year, and then through club you do representative stuff, so you play for your state and then your country, and that's like week-long tournaments for the, like only 1 week tournament for the entire year, so it's completely different. The US system's a bit better because you get to play all year round, and you're with the same team, where back home basketball's not as big of a sport. We've got so many other sports of like rugby and cricket that you guys don't have that are more dominant, so basketball sort of takes a back seat. But I got lucky to be brought up in a basketball family where my mum played professionally, and so I went through juniors and did all the representative stuff, and now I'm over here in the States.
Did you try anything different than basketball?
I played AFL, which is Australian football, which is hard to explain because it's the most unique sport anyone could ever watch, but it's sort of like rugby, but like there's no pads, and you can hit each other whenever you want. It's a tough sport, that's for sure. And then I surfed. I was a surfer as well. I live by the beach.
Yeah, surfing's a little light here in Arizona, so.
I know. It's tough. I've had to adjust, that's for sure.
On campus at GCU, and we're talking with Jared Martin, talk to the Lopes every week. This week we're talking GCU basketball, the basketball team tomorrow night at home against New Mexico State, biggest game of the year by far. When you're on campus, do you find yourself attracted to other American sports? Do you go to see the lacrosse or the soccer and be part of the student activities, or is there simply just not time between basketball and studies?
There's definitely some times, and I'm a big supporter of GCU athletics. I love going to watch the other teams because we've sort of got a culture here where everyone's really close and everyone is friends with each other, especially in the athletics department. So I find myself I've grown to like, even though we don't have NFL here, I watch that and college football a lot, but then I've come to like baseball a lot more, and then we don't have a lacrosse team. We have a club lacrosse team I've watched a couple of times, but in terms of more like volleyball, soccer, I tend to go to most of those sports.
In Australia, do they have the Havocs?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. We don't have anything close to that.
And now you've got an idea to go back there and start something, right?
Exactly. If I can get back and try and start a basketball student section or just a rowdy crowd, we need it back home. We need some support.
Tell me about school. What are you studying? What do you want to do with it when basketball is all said and done?
So I just graduated in December in sports management. My degree is in sports management, so I'm starting my master's in business admin in the next couple of weeks, so I'm excited to do that. But once I finish playing, that's a very good question. I've thought about coaching, I've thought about getting into front office stuff, but definitely sticking around basketball because that's been my love since I was a little kid, and that's where all my contacts are, and I just love the sport, and hopefully I kind of want to take it back home and make basketball grow, especially in Australia, because I've been lucky to have all these opportunities and experiences around the world, and I want other kids to be able to sort of take advantage of this stuff that I've been able to.
Last question, and that is your GCU experience. What would you sum it up, high points of being at Grand Canyon?
It's hard to put into words. It's been the best experience of my life. I've had four of the best years. I've got one more year after this. Just the people, the basketball program, Coach Marley. It's been a dream come true. I've been so happy. I've been so lucky.
Appreciate the visit. Good luck the rest of the year. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Jared Martin. Talk to the Lopes. It's fun. I love doing Talk to the Lopes every week, every Wednesday. And again, they have New Mexico State. That is tomorrow night. That will be on campus at Grand Canyon University, and that is going to be a big-time battle. It'll be fun. That's Talk to the Lopes for this week.